Hello and welcome to the Events That Made Me, with me, Liz Taylor. As an international events planner for too many years to mention, I know how important certain moments in your life can be. So I wanted to speak to some of the most interesting people that I know and find out what events made them. And with every interview, you get an air extension, a bonus episode that digs a little deeper on something you can learn from my guests.
So let's get cracking and have some fun.
I have to admit that today's guest filled me with a little bit of trepidation, not because I feared there'd be no chemistry. We met through Eamon Holmes, so there was an instant repartee. But it's based on the depth of the man that I'm really keen to understand. And so it's with great pleasure that I welcome Christopher Kenneth Biggins, known to his friends as Biggins. What are we going to call you, Christopher, Kenneth, or Biggins?
Oh, I think Biggins, Elizabeth.
Oh God, only my mother calls me Elizabeth, and that's when I'm in deep trouble. You were born a Lancashire lad, which explains the warmth and the humour that's been a trademark of yours. And you secured your first lead stage role, I understand, at the age of 17. Were you still a virgin then, Biggins?
I was still a virgin at 17. I was, actually. Yes, I was still a virgin. At Halcyon days then, you know, it was a... We're talking about 45, 46 years ago.
No, you're 55. Lying sod. Thank you.
56 years ago. My maths are not very good.
I think our maths is never very good as we get older. But you were 17 in your first lead stage role. So tell us how it started.
Well, what happened was that as you quite rightly said, I was born in Oldham, Royton. And my mother, who was a Hampshire hog, lived down south, and my father was from Oldham, and my mother hated Oldham. She couldn't bear it. I mean, it was black, it was disgusting, it was dirty. I had pneumonia, I nearly died. So she wrapped me in cotton wool and put me into the back of a Pickford's lorry and took me down to Salisbury. And I still to this day have an aversion to cotton wool, you'd be pleased to hear. But anyway, when I was in Salisbury, I went, my parents worked very hard, and I was sent to a private school. And my great auntie Vi, who was a terrible snob, insisted I have elocution lessons because all my family taught like that. They're all from Wiltshire. And they're, you know, my mother, when she was alive, taught like that. My brother still talks like that. My niece and nephew talk like that. So I had elocution lessons through my great auntie Vi. And my elocution mistress was a woman called Mrs. Christian, who was divine. And she obviously saw something in me and encouraged me into acting. And I played lots of roles for the school. We had a music teacher called Mr. Lewis, and I did things like Gilbert and Sullivan shows. I played Katisha, the female lead in The Mikado. I played the Pirate King in Pirates of Penzance. So I had that sort of background. So when I came to leave school at 16 and a half years old, should I go to college? Should I go to university? Should I join the theatre? No, I'll join the theatre. So I went along to our Salisbury Rep, which was a fantastic repertory company, really high standard. And I said to, could I see the man who runs the theatre, who was a man called Reggie Salberg? I met him and I said, can I have a job? And he looked at me and said, well, you can come for 2 weeks and do She Stoops to Conquer. And I did She Stoops to Conquer and I stayed 2 years. I was a student ASM for £2 a week, and then I went up to a stage manager for £8 a week.
I actually don't want to interview you. I just want you to talk and talk and talk because I love you. All the nights out we've had and all the drinks and whatever, we've never actually got down to the roots. And you had a privileged upbringing. Do you have any siblings?
When I left home, I did 2 years at Salisbury Rep, as I just told you. And then I left home to go to Bristol Old Vic School because one of the actresses in the company was the brilliant Stephanie Cole, who is a wonderful, wonderful actress. And she insisted I go to drama school. So I applied for Bristol Old Vic, where she went, and I got in. So when I was leaving to go, bearing in mind I was an only child, and when I was leaving home to go, my mother said, oh, she said, I must tell you, said, by the way, I'm pregnant. And I said, don't be so stupid. I mean, the thought of one's parents still doing it was appalling. And suddenly I had a brother who was 18 years younger than me, called Sean. And he's not a brother at all, he's a friend. And he's a lovely boy. I mean, he's been married He's been married twice. He's got two children by the first wife, who I adore, my niece and nephew. And so he's there. That's him.
I obviously have done a little bit of research on you, and we've got Porridge. We've got Whatever Happened to the Likely Lads. And then we've got I, Claudius. And we've got Masada. I mean, the most interesting of opportunities, which reflect your ability to dramatise any role. And I've seen you dramatise a role in a restaurant when you ordered a meal. I mean, you have got the gift of the gab. But what I'm interested to know is, which one would you say made you? Which event made you? Which made you turn left or right? Because I believe that you're better known for TV, comedy, rather than stage. And I might be doing you an injustice here, but to me, that's who Biggins is.
No, I mean, it's very interesting you should say that, because I mean, television-wise, which is something that nearly everybody knows in a way, because when you do theatre, only a minority of people know that you do theatre or see your theatre, whereas television, millions of you see. I mean, you know, a changing point in my career was definitely Porridge. I mean, to be involved in a series with the brilliant Ronnie Barker and Richard Beckinsale was fantastic. And of course, we did that in 1974. So nearly 50 years ago, we did that series. And it's still as wonderful and as bright as it was when it was first made in 1974. Then I always consider a change in my career. I've had many changes in my career, but I think a great change is when I played Nero in I, Claudius, which was a fantastic role in an unbelievably fantastic series. I was very, very proud to do that. And the night that was transmitted, the producer of a series called Poldark rang the producer of I, Claudius and said, "What's that Biggins like?" And he gave me a very good review. And I then went on to play Ozzie Whitworth, the sex-crazed vicar in Poldark, which was always a great, great role for me. And in fact, he was voted by the Daily Mail readers the most hated man on television that year. So that was really good. And then you may be surprised for me to say to you that probably the highlight of my career has been I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here.
Get away.
No, it really is. Because not only having won it, which was fantastic to win because it was the public voting for it, but it changed my life in so many ways. I mean, it was a wonderful experience. I mean, The Jungle, a lot of people either hate or they love. I loved it. It was fantastic.
You see, that's on my list here of things to chat about, because you won that in 2007. And I'm always intrigued by people that go in it. I mean, I could no more jump out of a plane or swim across an ocean, except possibly for £200,000 plus. But you know, that's a whole other story. But I want to know, who is your soulmate in The Jungle? What you? Because you're a voyeur. You actually look at people. You're very, very clever at judging people. You sit there quietly and you actually get it. I've seen you do it.
Yeah, I'm very good at, you're right, I am good at doing that. I mean, I think, you know, interestingly enough, this week on this morning with Philip and Holly, they've been showing clips of various people in The Jungle. And I've been on four times this week because they show the sequence where we're in an underground dungeon, Anna Ryder Richardson and myself. And Anna Ryder Richardson was a great friend. And Anna Ryder Richardson and I were in this underground dungeon on hammocks, very tight hammocks, with a porto loo in the corner. And we were there for, I think it was 18 hours, and they let in 200 rats. And we managed actually to fall asleep, believe it or not, and they had night cameras on. And one of the rats managed to crawl up and went on my crutch. Now I'm asleep, and I half wake up and go, "Oh, what's that?" And I'm rummaging around in the dark, thinking that the rat, which everybody can see, is my water bottle, which I'd taken with me. And then I go back to sleep again, and then I discover the rat, and I scream, it's on me, get it off. And it is one of the funniest sequences ever. That's why they've been showing it this week. So, you know, it was, so Anna Ryland Richardson was a great friend.
You were brave to do that. You were very brave to do that. Have they ever asked you to do have you done Big Brother?
I did Big Brother, which I hated. Big Brother was the most hateful thing because they wanted rid of me.
I don't actually think it's done you any harm. I mean, it's not curtailed your career.
Hello, Biggins here. These are the events that made me, in conversation with Liz Taylor. Mm-hmm.
Now, let's just talk about your friends, because you are, as I know, a bit of a babe magnet. You have this ability to sort of draw. You've got the most amazing black book of dinner dates. If ever I've needed you for something or contacted you, it's, oh, well, you know, I'm out with Leslie Joseph and I'm here with Linda Robson and I can't come, darling. I'm with Joan Collins tonight. You're an enigma to all of us because I just... Well, no, you're not the enigma. I think Joan, first of all, is the enigma. We have to talk about her because she is who I want to be as I step into my twilight years. And I want you to share her secret with me.
I tell you what her secret is. And we Zoom once a week with some friends, the jeweler, Theo Fennell, and his wife. That's always hysterical because that works. It's. I tell you, it would make a TV series, just that one Zoom, because Theo Fennell, the jeweler, is one of the funniest men ever.
And there's and a talented.
Lot, and very talented, too. I mean, it's amazing. So that, and I speak to her about three times a week. And what is great about Joan, she is so generous with her friends. And by that, I mean, she will introduce people to people and then they get on and then everything about it is fantastic. She's a very open. She loves people. I mean, she is, this lockdown is very frustrating for her because, of course, she goes out for lunch meetings, tea meetings, dinners, breakfast. She's always out because she loves, and being at home, even with Percy, who she adores, she's frustrated by it because she wants to get out and talk to people and chat and be Joan Collins. And it's very frustrating for her.
How did you meet her? Just very quickly, I'm just interested to know how you actually met her. I mean, what did Joan Collins see in Christopher Kenneth Biggins?
Well, I was in New York I was at the Algonquin going to see a jazz musician. And there was a friend of mine, somebody I knew vaguely, called Robin Hurlston. And he came over to me and he said, hi, how are you? And I said, very well. And he said, are you looking forward to seeing this? I said, yes. What are you doing in New York? Blah, 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 conversation. He said, I said, who are you with? He said, I'm with my girlfriend, Joan Collins. And he pointed across the room and there was Joan Collins. So we went into the theater and it was a dinner theater or cocktails or what have you. And Joan said, let's sit together. So we sat together. And we never stopped talking and laughing all night long. I mean, it was a heaven. It was a relationship made in heaven. It was quite fantastic. And so then we say goodbye. And then I go back to London. And her PA, Stella, rang me and said, oh, Mr. Biggins, Miss Collins really enjoyed meeting you in Los Angeles, in New York. Would you like to go to a dinner with her next week, a charity event? So I said, yes, I would love to. And so I went to that and on my own with her, and we again hit it off. I mean, there was something about the two of us that just worked, and it was fantastic. And so that was, that must be 25 years ago, if not longer. And we've been together ever since. I mean, she's amazing. I've been to stay with her in Los Angeles in her house, and there was a couple called Marvin and Barbara Davis, who were the billionaires, and they were like the king and queen of Hollywood. And one day the phone went at Joan's, and Joan handed me the phone, and it was Barbara Davis. She said, Christopher, we're having a 97th birthday party for George Burns. Would you like to come? So I said, thank you very much. Put the phone down, went around the apartment screaming. I couldn't believe it. I was being invited. So we went to the house, and in the foyer of the house, in the hallway, was where the party was. And there were 12 tables of 10 in the foyer of their house, the size of the house. So we all were there. We had drinks. We went to the tables. And there was the Joan Collins table. There was the Jackie Collins table. There was the Sidney Poitier table. There was the Michael Caine table. There were stars everywhere. My table was me sitting next to Shakira Caine, sitting next to Frank Sinatra, sitting next to Barbara Davis, our hostess, sitting next to George Burns, sitting next to Abe Woman, sitting next to Sid Lawrence of Sid Lawrence and Edie Gourmet, sitting next to one of the daughters of the hosts, sitting next to Dan Aykroyd. And Dan Aykroyd said to me, Biggins, pinch yourself. You don't often get evenings like this. Now, I thought to myself, if my mother could see me sitting opposite George Burns, but forget George Burns, if she could see me sitting one away from Frank Sinatra. I mean, I couldn't believe it.
Can you imagine what Auntie Vi would have thought? Never mind your mother. Oh, my God. Thank God you had those bloody elocution lessons. What an amazing, amazing experience. I mean, that's amazing.
It really was. And during dinner, I called Frank Sinatra, sir, and I called him Mr. Sinatra. And eventually he said to me, Christopher, call me Frank. So I thought, I can't let this moment go by. So I said, Frank, about 8 years ago in London, I played Nathan Detroit in Guys and Dolls. And he said, you know, Christopher, so did I. I thought, that's it. I can die now and go to heaven. And at the end of dinner, he said to me, I go out in the hallway of this huge area we've been eating in. And I thought, my God, he wants to kill me. And he wanted to have a cigarette and his wife didn't like him to smoke. So I had to stand guard and we had another wonderful conversation. I mean, it was one of the great evenings of my life.
Oh, my. Have you written a book?
I have, yes.
What's it called?
It's called Just Biggins.
Well, I think I need to read this. Is all this in the book? Because
I'll send you a copy, Liz.
Will you?
Yeah, I will.
Will you sign it?
Of course I will.
Please sign it. And I know that there is another woman that you are or were a bit in awe of, and quite the opposite to Joan. But I know that you were a big fan of Margaret Thatcher's. And I just give me a sort of just a slight insight, because I know that you've got quite strong political opinions. And it often, you know, being an actor, a comedian or whatever, you don't get to share those. And I'm interested because I was a big fan of I was of Margaret Thatcher.
Well, Margaret Thatcher was an extraordinary woman. I mean, what she did politically was sensational. And of course, like all great politicians, towards the end of their careers, they mistime it, they misuse it, and they fail miserably. And that, of course, what's happened. But I remember vividly, I was in my car going down Marylebone High Street, and the news came on that she'd been evicted from 10 Downing Street by all the other politicians, and I burst into tears. I was so devastated by that news. I mean, I went to 10 Downing Street, and we were having a conversation, and in my book, I've got these three pictures of us facing each other, and we have our hands, both of us have our hands about 8 inches apart. And the second picture is we have our hands about 1'6" apart. And the third picture is our hands about 3 feet apart. And we were talking, it looks like we're talking about men's penises, but in fact we weren't. We were talking about the art that they had in 10 Downing Street, which is fascinating. And then eventually, you know, I always used to keep bumping into her. And I remember the last time I saw her, when she was very, very frail, she was at the memorial service Forte.
Charles.
Yeah, and it was the memorial service for him. And we were all there at the Abbey, and suddenly she came walking down the aisle on her own. And she was in black, and she looked spectacular. And so everybody was kind of, you know, amazed and thrilled that she was there. And then there was a party afterwards, and at the party, she was walking towards me, and there was a young man by her side. And I heard him say to her, Christopher Biggins, the actor. And she went, Christopher, how are you, my dear?
That's classic. That is classic.
I am fascinated by Biggins and how he seems to just create great friendships with people in high places. Hear how forming great relationships can get you into great places in life and in business in my bonus air extension episode, which is in your podcast feed now.
I laughed when I read this because in 2017, you received a Lifetime Achievement Award it was the Great British Pantomime Awards. And I always think that when they distribute these, it's like good night, God bless. You've either got one foot in the grave or, you know, you're about to be put out in the heap. But I know that behind this great Dave is a very, very focused, intelligent actor. What's your biggest success?
I think I've really touched on it already, is I'm a celebrity, get me out of here.
Do you think that was your biggest success?
I really do think that's the thing that put me, it was 2007, you're right. And so that's, how many years ago is that now?
It's 13 years ago.
13 years ago, and I'm still living off it. I mean, people still remember it. It was such a strong year that people still talk about it. I mean, people come up to me and say, oh, we loved it when you were in the jungle. And so that is been very important to me. Of course, I can't forget the I Claudius's and the pole darks and porridge and all those other things and pantomime, which I've managed to, you know, make a big niche for myself in. And I'm due to do pantomime this year in Dartford. And sadly, I don't think any pantomimes will be on this year.
What were you going to do?
I was going to go, we were doing Jack and the Beanstalk and I was playing Dame Trot.
Maybe, you know, it's a blessing then.
I've got trots. It's a great shame because I don't think people will have the confidence to go to the theatre.
No, I mean, I wouldn't go to the theatre. Listen, who knows? But at the end of the day, you know, at least you've still got lots of opportunities ahead of you.
Yes.
And in old roles, of course. And I know that you have a great relationship with Neil, your partner, who you entered into a civil partnership with some years ago, I think in 2006. You're a great yin and yang. I mean, how he puts up with you is, you know, he is totally, totally brilliant and not one to be underestimated because he's quite quiet and very refined, but he gets it and he gets you. And I've seen the interaction. So tell me the three things that are on your bucket list. What are the, you've met Sinatra, you know, you've sat in opposite whoever, Rodgers and Hammerstein, whoever. What are the three things? What are the three things on your bucket list?
Well, I would like to, it's a very good question, Liz. I've always, on my bucket list some time ago, was always to direct a film, which I think I probably still want to direct a film because I like, I'm quite bossy and I do direct theatre. But I don't want to direct television because there are too many cameras. But I have one camera and a good cameraman and good technicians. I think I could. And there's things I would like to do, but I don't know whether I will do that now at my age. Anyway, it would be nice to think so. But I mean, that is one. I would very much like to travel more, but I think the problem going to be now is that I think when this lockdown happened, there were 200 airlines around the world, roughly. And I think next year there'll be 20. And I think traveling will be so difficult and expensive. And I'm of an age now that I don't want to go over 4 hours. I don't want to go anywhere unless I got a bed. Now, I think it's going to be prohibitively expensive because if they do what they're going to say they're going to do, which is take out seats, they've got to charge more for people to fly. And I don't think people, fun enough, will fly for a long time. I think it's going to be a difficult one. And the other thing, I just want to be happy forever with Neil. I mean, you know, Neil is the most marvelous person. He is fantastic with me. He's terrific. At the moment in this lockdown, he's cooking up a storm. He's in the garden doing garden. He's doing everything. I've got a bad knee. I've got bone on bone. So I was due to go and have an operation, have a new knee. But of course, that was all put on hold. So once I'm up, I'm fine. But we do walk every day, and so you know. But Neil is terribly important to me. He's wonderful.
It's a shame, isn't it? Because you know, we've all you and I are similar generation, not quite there, but similar. But you know, we've all worked so hard through life to get to an age where we can go and travel and see the world and enjoy it, and then all of a sudden the plug's pulled and. Yeah, we can't go anywhere. But you know what? The sky's blue. We're here. We're here to tell the tale.
And, exactly.
And finally, I know apart from myself, I want to know who is on your dinner party list.
Right. So now I think a good number is eight people. I would say it's you and Liz, you and me, so that's two. So
well, you don't have to include me because this is really, you know, this is not real. We're not having
all
a
right,
real
okay.
build, you know. So all just right. tell me.
So, well, I would absolutely love to have Elizabeth, Her Majesty the Queen, because I'm a great fan of the Queen. I've met her on many, many occasions. She's made me laugh a lot. She's a fantastic woman. And I think to have an evening with her and Playa with martinis would be wonderful, because I think she'd let loose with a lot of gossip. I would like to have... Can it be Living and Dead?
Yes.
So I've got the Queen. I would love to have... I think I'd like to see Frank Sinatra again. I bring him back. I think he'd be great fun. And I think the Queen would... I put him, the Queen, between him and myself. And I think she'd rather enjoy that. I would have... David Beckham, who I think is so gorgeous and so attractive. And he'd be on my other side. I would have...
On his own?
On his own. Except I have to say, I've never really liked Victoria. But I met Victoria with Joan at a function, and she left her phone on our table between me and Joan. And I picked it up and I said, "Is this yours, Joan?" She said, "No." And I said, "Oh, it must be Victoria's." So I went over to Victoria and I said, "I think you left this." "Oh my God," she said. She gave me a kiss on the lips. She said, "I've always loved you. I've always thought you were wonderful." And so I changed my mind about her suddenly. But she's always a bit sort of uppish, I thought. I was in the Ivy one year with some friends, and David Beckham was there, and he kept smiling at me. So when I'd been to the loo, I went back by their table and I said hi, and he said, "Oh," he said, I was brought up on you. I loved Rent-A-Ghost, and I loved all the children things I did. And she didn't say a word and just put her makeup on, did her lips, so I was a bit off her. But,
I know. I met her because, you know, I did all the Manchester United parties for many, since 1995.
Of course, yes.
And she was a Tafu, and she was very difficult. And David is a great friend of Gary Neville, so there's that whole boy thing going on. And
right.
And so yes, she. But you know, you missed a trick there, Biggins, because the difference between you and I is if I'd picked that phone up, I'd have scanned it first before giving it back to her. I'd have had every bloody contact in that list. You're obviously a much nicer man than I am, woman.
You're right, and I didn't think about it in the cab on the way home. I'd have Nero, because when I played Nero and I Claudius, I absolutely had a complete... I just knew that in a past life, I was Nero. I mean, I just love the way he's... life was. I love the way that he was mean to people. I love the way that, you know, as a emperor, he would have probably had 300 servants, and the idea of 300 servants to me is pure heaven. I would love someone to wake me up in the morning, someone else to undress me, someone else to bathe me, someone else to give me my breakfast, someone else to dress me. All of those things I would love. So we're up to what now? Five, I think.
I've tried that, Biggins, and let me tell you, it's overrated.
Is it?
Yeah, definitely overrated. To have somebody to undress you and somebody to wake you up and somebody to... much better on your own. But carry on. Let's see who else there is.
I think I probably have someone like Winston Churchill, who I was a great admirer of, and I think he was a great man. And I think I definitely have Margaret Thatcher. So I think she would be a good one to have. And I suppose I should have someone, a young film star, I suppose, would be quite fun. Oh, I know, of course. Betty Davis. I'd have Betty Davis.
Oh, fabulous.
Yeah, I think she'd be good. I think
with Joan
good
or not?
Group.
With Joan Crawford or not? With Joan
no,
Crawford.
No, I don't think I'd have Joan Crawford. I think she was mean, Joan Crawford.
Yeah.
She was a great actress, but I think... I think Betty Davis, and I met her, you know, years and years ago. She came to a, you won't believe this, she came to Croydon, you know, outside London, to do a one-woman show. And the one-woman show was the first act, was a screen, and they showed clips of all her movies. It was fantastic. At the end of all the clips, they said, "Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Miss Betty Davis." And she walked under the screen, and there was Betty Davis. And that was the end of act one. And the act two was a question and answer. And I didn't ask a question, but I mean, afterwards there was a little cocktail party and I met her, and she was unbelievable. I mean, I thought she was one of the great film actresses ever. I mean, she was just wonderful. So that's my dinner party.
Well, I think you're one of the great actors, Biggins. I think you are bloody amazing. I've had the best hour. I had no idea that you were so well connected. I am definitely going to stay in touch with you a lot more than I have done, because you're extremely influential. I love you lots, and thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Liz. I've loved it as well.
It's hard not to be floored by the career Biggins has had and the people he's hung out with. Make sure you listen to the Bonus Air Extension episode, where I uncover how forming great relationships is key to maintaining your career. That's in your podcast feed now. Thank you for listening. And if you loved this episode, make sure you leave a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts and that you hit that subscribe or follow button so you automatically get the next episode in your feed. And you can find me on all the socials as at Liz Taylor Consultancy. Tag me in and I will reply. You get a new episode of Events That Made Me every Wednesday. My next guest is one of the most inspiring women I know.
Losing mum nearly killed me, and literally probably I was saved. I truly was saved. And I just think to myself, I don't know how I clawed my way back. And I thank Strictly for that massively.
It's Lisa Riley.